Today on Maine Calling, paid family leave before the Maine legislature. If you have to miss work because of a new baby or serious medical condition, should you be paid? In much of the country, you are. 13 states have enacted FMLA, paid family and medical leave programs, though they differ widely in how they're funded, how many weeks off they cover, and who can take part. California's law is the oldest. It has been in place since 2004. New Hampshire's is among the youngest. It began in January of this year. Last week, the Maine Legislature's Labor Committee advanced a paid FMLA bill along party lines. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn what is being proposed for Maine, how it would work, and why some are opposing this bill, even though they support the idea in principle. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at WelchForbes.com. By Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn.
This is Maine Calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. A bill to provide Maine workers up to 12 weeks of paid leave is making its way through the legislature. Last Thursday, it cleared a key committee vote. Today, we have the legislation's lead sponsor, Senator Mattie Daughtry, who is a Democrat from Brunswick, joining us. And also with us, Representative Dick Bradstreet, who represents Vassalboro and is the lead Republican on the legislature's Joint Committee on Labor and Housing. We're going to learn all about what's being proposed and what some of the pros and cons are. We invite you to join the conversation. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. Thank you so much for joining us for the hour. Mattie, because it is you behind the bill, I'm going to start with you. Tell us about it. What does it do? I think that a lot of people like the idea of paid leave if somebody has a baby or has a serious illness, but getting from liking the idea to a bill in place that could possibly pass is a pretty tough road. What do we have in front of us?
So what we're looking at now is the result of 3 years of intensive work between myself and my co-sponsor, Representative Kristen Cloutier. And for me personally, this is a policy I've been working on for over a decade. It's one of the first things I started researching and working on when I got elected when I was 25. But the bill that came out of committee is the result of a large amount of years worth of work and a real journey that no other state that has this program has been able to go on. Representative Cloutier and I co-chaired a commission that looked at all hundreds of different cost comparisons and models. And then after the commission report came out, she and I went on tour. We went, you know, we talked to folks like, you know, Roostic Partnerships, you know, folks down east. We spoke with over 300 businesses and over 500 different individuals. And we really tried to figure out what the concerns were. Because as you said, we can all agree folks should be able to take time off, but how do we find a program that works for Maine? And so we took the commission's report and we really hammered out a compromise that really addresses the needs of not only employees, but also employers. So what was passed out would provide a maximum of 12 weeks of leave for individuals. All employees would be able to opt in. But if you're a company and you already offer this type of policy, one, thank you. But you would be able to keep your private plan and you and your employees would be opt out of the system. But for small businesses and medium-sized businesses who don't have this, they'd be able to opt in. Additionally, there's different job protections to make sure that our small seasonal employers don't have an undue hardship placed upon them as well.
All right. And how many people would this affect? Do you estimate? Because as you said, companies that already offer this will be able to opt out. And my understanding is that businesses that are under a certain number, is it 15, will be able to opt out, which I understand is the majority of businesses in Maine. So how many people would actually be affected by this?
So first off, for those who are 15 and fewer, they could opt out if they're providing a private plan, but the employer would not be responsible for the contribution, but the employees could still be able to use the leave and opt into the program. Because for 15 and fewer, we're talking about 90,000 employees. The entire sort of workforce that we'd be looking at is about 600,000. And so that's what the demographics on this were modeled on.
All right, I'm going to turn to you, Representative Bradstreet. I understand that you, like many of your colleagues, would like to see some sort of paid family leave act, but are uncomfortable with this bill as it stands. Is that accurate? And if so, what makes you uncomfortable?
Well, we understand the situation a lot of people find themselves in. I mean, we've all lived through life. We've had children. We've had illnesses in the families. We understand that it's a big concern. However, we're of the mindset that whenever you can incentivize something to enable people to reach a certain goal, it's much better than a mandate. And this is a mandate. It's a tax mandate. It will raise taxes. And I know that the sponsor and other people don't use that term, but it is a tax. I think even the Bangor Daily News called it a tax. We're also concerned that we're going from, we have a Medical Leave Act right now. We don't provide funding for it. But what we're doing with this particular bill is going from the parameters of the unpaid leave to paid leave, and the parameters are much broader. The 12 weeks we think is pretty extreme. Rate of reimbursement benefits are high, especially compared to those of other states. I'd also like to point out that only 14 states have this right now. We have to be careful that we're not outliers on a number of different things when it comes to our economy. That means 36 states don't have it. Maybe we'll be placed in a situation where we have this paid family medical leave and an expensive paid family medical leave too. Not a moderately priced one, but an expensive one. And that's concerning for a lot of small businesses. It should be concerning too for a lot of workers who think they may be covered, but may not be. I looked at the particular survey that was done. Within the next 2 years, I think close to two-thirds of the people surveyed expected that they would qualify for have situations under which they'd qualify for this plan. I also looked at the survey and it said about a third of them, 32.9%, I think, thought that they would have a baby within the next 2 years. And that tells me that the survey was skewed towards younger people who normally do look for more benefits. I think, we can reach a compromise somewhere. Senator Daughtry did mention compromise, but we weren't part of any compromise. I think a lot of people believe that when you're negotiating something that you're in the same room. We're not in the same room. We didn't get the even the First Amendment until the day before the public hearing, and the Second Amendment, which is the new bill, until the day before the work session. So we have no real chance to respond. The business community that advised us on some of these matters didn't really have a chance to respond. We might have wanted to even proposed a minority report, but we didn't even have the opportunity to do that because we didn't even know what was in the language of the bill until the night before.
Okay.
So, okay, I think
Yeah, I
that
was
gives
just
me.
thinking, yeah, there's a lot to talk about there, and I want to take some of those things one at a time. And Representative Bradstreet, you were talking about the cost of the bill, and Maddie Daughtry, Representative Daughtry, let's talk about that. It would be, I understand, 1% of a salary from the employee and then 1% of the salary from the employer. No, you're shaking your head. What, how does it work?
So the 1% is a guardrail to ensure that the cost of this program never goes over a certain percentage. And so it's 1% for both the employee and the employer combined. Additionally, we want this to be responsive to the economy, and that's why there isn't that firm contribution number, because that needs to be set through rulemaking and based on what Mainers can afford. And so ideally, it would be somewhere between, 0.5 and less per person. And so most of the models at the more expensive modeling that we looked at over the past few years, we're looking at about $2 per person per week. We actually amended the tier based on what we heard at the public hearing after 7.5 hours of public testimony to make it closer to what other states have. And so it'd be closer to that, you know, 66% of your wages and not the 90% that was in the original bill. If anyone opens up their paycheck today and you look at, you know, this is how it's funneled through payroll contributions. Other state Supreme Courts have actually ruled that it's not a tax, but that's, you know, semantics. What people care about is what they're able to get and what it costs. And so at the lower tier that we're proposing, it's going to be much more streamlined and more affordable than anything else that funnels through our payroll. If you look at what you pay into Social Security, this would be less than a quarter of that.
All right. And I apologize. I called you Representative Daughtry, Senator Daughtry. Let me turn to you, Representative Bradstreet. You said that Republicans are interested in coming up with something that will pass. And I'm wondering what would be a compromise that you would be interested in? Would it be something like instead of 12 weeks, 8 weeks?
Well, you know, again, we haven't had a chance to really talk about that among our caucus and our committee. We also should realize that hanging over all of us is the prospect of a citizens-initiated referendum on this matter, which kind of is holding a gun to our head, in our opinion, that we have to come up with something that satisfies them or they will send it to referendum. And I think that, granted, the committee way is the best way to do this. And I applaud the senator for bringing this forward, because we do have to discuss this within the confines of our legislative makeup. So in order to come up with any particular proposals, we need to go back to the table and talk about these things. We haven't had a chance really to vet the new bill. I think we would be interested in looking at something that's less comprehensive, where the parameters are tightened up somewhat. There are proposals in the bill that are going to refer it to rulemaking, and that concerns a lot of us as well, because rulemaking does not always encompass the total body of the bill. Case in point, I was on the committee a couple of sessions ago when we voted for paid family leave, paid time off. We thought that excluded from that were coaches who would get stipends and substitute teachers. And yet they were included in the bill. And I think that was done through rulemaking, not necessarily something that shouldn't have been done, but they had to go according to what was in the law. And for some reason that got let out of the law. So I think we have to be very cautious when we go to rulemaking. We have to give very strict parameters when we do that. So the answer to that is we need to go back and we need to slow walk this bill and make sure that everybody can buy into it. We talk about tax incentives. That may be more attractive, make it more attractive to business people. I think that's one thing we could look at.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, Senator Daughtry, I understand that this bill, as you mentioned, first in the nation, even though other states do have some kind of Family Medical Leave Act in place, there are no two that are identical. And in fact, New Hampshire's that just went into effect is entirely different. It's more of an insurance policy that people can opt into.
Yeah. So first off, this is also very much like an insurance policy. I mean, if you were to distill everything into one sentence, paid family medical leave is an insurance program that provides a wage replacement when the best and worst happens, whether that's birth of a child or taking care of, you know, a terminal illness of a loved one. And so first off, I need to be clear that Maine is already an outlier. We're the only state in New England without some sort of paid family medical leave program. And, you know, I have been watching New Hampshire very carefully. And honestly, my first few bills were the exact program that passed in New Hampshire. I thought for many years out of the past decade that that was the right model for Maine. It turns out it's actually not, and it's much, much more expensive. They're having a lot of trouble getting carriers to be able to offer a private program and to be able to get those options. And so what's actually happening for New Hampshire residents is that they're actually getting less options than they would if they didn't have the plan. So, you know, I've looked at all those different aspects. And I think one of the really great things for Maine is that we get to learn from all the other states that have passed this, that we really get to study their best and worst practices and learn from them. And there's some really great models. For example, 12 weeks actually fits in with 10 other states, and all of our neighbors in New England, most of them actually have more weeks. So we, you know, my co-sponsor, Representative Cloutier, and I really wanted to look at what that sort of middle ground was. And that's where we came up with those 12 weeks. Additionally, one thing that we have that no other state has, that my colleague was talking about in the rulemaking, is we have suggested the most robust oversight entity of this program of anywhere in the nation. And part of that, what, you know, we've talked a lot about in committee, and I think we all agree on, is we want to have major substantive rulemaking, which means the entire, you know, bill is part of this further public discourse. We've heard that from insurance carriers, we've heard that from advocates, we've heard it from opponents. And so I think what is really key is exactly what we're saying is, you know, this is something that we keep discussing. And I think the best work always happens in committee. And that's why, especially with the referendum out there, why, unfortunately, we're in a tighter timeline.
And Representative Bradstreet, I want to ask you sort of about the bigger picture here. And the bigger picture is that Maine needs more people to work in its hospitals, in its manufacturing facilities, in its schools. This is a problem throughout the state, whether north, south, east, or west. It's also a problem across different kinds of industries. And I'm wondering if this is the big picture that we're looking at here. How can we get more people who may be staying at home for some reason into the workforce? And then also, how can we get more younger people to come to Maine and make their lives here?
Well, thank you. Recently, my wife and I traveled across country, went to Colorado to our grandson's wedding. And everywhere we stopped on the way, people were looking for helpers. Workforce issue is not just in Maine, it's everywhere in the country. Now, getting back to how do we attract more people to Maine. Well, you know, we do have, unfortunately, one of the worst economic climates in the country compared to other states. When you talk to the people who actually look at that, I know some entities don't agree with that, but it's the people who provide the jobs that we need to listen to. We also, you know, there's a contention in the bill that this will draw more people back into the workforce. Perhaps so. And if that's the case, then maybe we should look at tax incentives for businesses. And I know one of the big issues with that might be the cost. Well, if we have more people back into the workforce, then more people working, providing more taxes, businesses will do better. They'll be paying more taxes. So any such tax incentive like that would be largely paid for by the virtue of the fact that we'd have more people working, if that's the case. So, you know, maybe we should try that. We haven't even really explored that very far. It might be a good idea to look at that.
All right. Well, we are talking about the proposed Family and Medical Leave Act before the Maine legislature. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from you. What are your questions about it? This is Maine Calling. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about proposed legislation to enact paid family and medical leave for Maine workers. Joining me, Senator Mattie Daughtry, who is a Democrat from Brunswick and lead sponsor of the proposed legislation. Also with me for the hour, Representative Dick Bradstreet. He represents Vassalboro and is the lead Republican on the legislature's Joint Committee on Labor and Housing. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Kate Blackford, who is Public Policy Director of the Maine People's Alliance. Kate, thanks for calling in, and I'm sure that you heard the senator and representative talk about the timeline they feel that they are under because of the referendum that your group has is backed. And I want you to tell me what would be on that referendum. When would Maine voters pass that?
Thank you, Jennifer, so much. It's great to be here. So the referendum, it would, if we put in the signatures, would go onto the ballot in 2024. And there's a lot of similarities between the policy that's in the ballot measure as well as what is being discussed by the committee. Some of the things that are really great about the legislation before us right now is that it includes the same universality, the same ability for anyone who is working in Maine to access paid family medical leave, regardless of the kind of work they have, whether it's seasonal or year-round, whether it's part-time or full-time. The leave scales with the kind of work, and that's true of both the legislation and the ballot measure. The types of leave are the same as well. So whether you are taking time to bond with a new child, whether that's for foster adoption or giving birth, whether that's around taking leave to care for yourself, if you are injured or ill, taking time to care for a loved one, taking time to care for all of the logistics that go into managing a loved one's military deployment, as well as extricating oneself from domestic violence. All of those leave uses are really important for Maine families, and those are in both. And also both make sure to split the cost between large employers and employees. So except for the self-employed and small businesses with fewer than 15 employees, everyone contributes the equal percentage of wages, which helps keep those costs really low. The ballot measure does have slightly longer leave. It's up to 16 weeks combined rather than a cap at 12. And the ballot measure doesn't privatize the program administration, which is an option in the legislation right now. And that's one of the things that we have been especially concerned about, because in the one state that has allowed for private benefit administration, we've seen that the administrative costs are nearly double for than other state experiences, and they've had a much higher rate of people being denied claims when they should have been approved. So there's erroneous claim denials at a much higher rate in Connecticut.
Right, Kate, I want to ask you, if the legislature does pass and if the governor signs a Paid Family and Medical Leave Act, would you then no longer pursue the referendum?
Well, it certainly depends on the policy that would be passed. But if we are looking at this legislation that got voted out of the Labor and Housing Committee, then yes. As long as we are making sure that everyone in Maine has the same access to leave, as long as it really works for low-income Mainers and the people least likely to have paid leave at work right now, then yes. We would be supporting that legislation and not putting the ballot, signatures in.
Well, Kate, thanks so much for calling in. Kate Blackford, Public Policy Director for the Maine People's Alliance. On the line with us now is Jeff Austin, who is the Vice President of Government Affairs and Communications for the Maine Hospital Association. Jeff, we just heard from Kate Blackford, who is very supportive, a priority for the Maine People's Alliance to pass a Paid Family and Medical Leave Act. But the Maine Hospital Association, my understanding, is opposes that. Why?
Well, thank you for having me, Jennifer. And we are very interested in continuing the conversations that we've had so far with supporters, including Senator Daughtry. Our concern right now is really the inverse of something Senator Daughtry just said. She said right now we're an outlier in New England because we don't have something. Our concern is that we become an outlier because what they're poised to adopt would be one of the most expensive versions in the country, and clearly the most expensive in New England and the most burdensome on employers in New England. So further conversation would be helpful. We don't have a lot of time, but we remain committed to doing something that fits in the New England model and not become an outlier and too expensive and burdensome on employers.
Jeff, is it not true that most hospitals in Maine, if not all hospitals, already offer paid family and medical leave? I know that Maine Health does, and it's one of the largest employers in the state.
Most of our members do offer what they typically call a short-term disability policy. Our understanding of the legislation, I think, is different than Senator Daughtry's. We're not allowed to keep our existing plans under the bill that's being proposed. The employers who offer some form of short-term disability would have to exactly conform to the state law. So the policies that we have in place are not in exact conformance with what's being proposed, and therefore we would not be allowed to keep them. And I think that's true for other employers. The language in the bill is not sort of comparable plan or substantially equivalent plan. You have to have an exactly equivalent plan, and we do not.
All right. I see Maddie Daughtry shaking your head. Maddie, I'm going to let you go.
Just real quick, you know, it's been great to be able to talk with all the various stakeholders and having a lot of conversations and agree that we need to find a way that this plan fits within other New England states. And additionally, one of the things that my co-chair, our co-sponsor and I are very passionate about is making sure that we have that robust process that says that employers, you know, it doesn't have to be an exact plan, because we know when it comes to, you know, an employee-driven economy, we want employers to be able to sort of compete on offering different plans. And so that's why I think the process of continuing to have that public input when it comes to, you know, rulemaking and the parameters will be so key, because I know many of the members of, you know, Jeff's group actually have really robust leave programs, and we should be encouraging them to continue offering those as well.
All right. And Jeff, I just want to ask you if indeed that situation is resolved, from your point of view, would the Maine Hospital Association change its position on this?
Not as the bill is currently crafted, because, again, we believe we would have to substantially conform one way or another to what's in the bill. And what's in the bill is an outlier in New England. The amount of benefits being offered is different than the other New England states. And probably most importantly, the employer share of the expense is the highest in New England, so, and one of the highest in the country. We're in the neighborhood, as drafted, of a bill that's $300 million a year. Most New England states like Connecticut, Rhode Island, do not ask employers to pay any of the program financing costs. And there's a reason for that. It's by not having us pay the program financing costs, you actually split the cost of leave, because employers in the state have to fully fund the replacement workers or forego revenue when you can't find replacement workers. And that's a major concern across all industries. So for hospitals, as I think your network has covered, we've had a real challenge in finding replacement nurses or traveling nurses, and they often come at a really high premium of cost. So if someone takes 2 days off, that's one issue. But under this bill, they can take 2 or even 3 months of work off. We have to fully fund the replacement worker.
Got it.
So that's a big issue for us.
Jeff, thanks so much for calling in. Jeff Austin, VP of Government Affairs and Communications for the Maine Hospital Association. Lots and lots of calls coming in. I want to try to go to as many as possible, starting with Jim in Lewiston. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Thank you, Jennifer. Jim Lyson from Lewiston speaking. And there's been representations that we've, you know, the time is too short or whatever. This has been going on for 10 years, and I applaud Senator Daughtry and Kristen Cloutier for preparing this this bill. And the commission worked for 3 years. So this has not been something that's overnight. And with all due respect to Representative Bradstreet, those are remarks that we've heard on just about everything. You know, it's too expensive and whatever, and even though small businesses are exempt from this, and I think that's the definition. If it's 15 employers or less, then they don't have to pay the contribution from the business. So this is good news for businesses, and I'm perplexed by why they're resisting the implementation of this. And this outlier thing is really pretty silly. We should do what's right for the people of Maine, and the people of Maine really want this program, and they need it. And I experienced recently my wife dying of cancer and not being able to, I mean, I had my own medical issues, too, that I had to deal with. And our daughter, who was front and center, had a flexible employer, but still, you know, the cancer moved too quickly, and she was dead in September. And she didn't take leave, and she would have known if she knew that it was going to be so short term. So people are facing this, you know, with a program that covers everybody, I think, is what we're looking for in this state. And it's really necessary. And I wouldn't worry about being outliers.
Okay.
And the businesses ought to look about what it would cost them to do this themselves. And it's much more than this program.
Yeah. Jim, I'm so sorry to hear about your wife. And Representative Bradstreet, what's about Jim's point that this has been discussed for a really long time, and we really aren't in such a hurry and under the gun as you may make it seem to be?
Well, yeah, thank you. I'm sorry for the situation he had to undergo. Losing family members is tough. We've all done that, and it's a big challenge. We're not disputing that at all. Let me get back to a little bit to the, I talked a little bit about the process, and he mentioned that we've been talking about this for a long time. This is the first time we've had an actual bill before us. We have to deal with what's before us. And Mr. Austin, I think, pointed out some salient features or issues that, we're talking about money is one thing, but the job worker replacement is something else that we haven't talked a whole lot about. And we're talking about small businesses who may be losing two or three workers at one time. What do they do? How do we make sure that they remain viable? I know there have been some attempts to in the bill to deal with that, but they usually come after the damage has already been done. We also have to look at, if we'll say you have 14 employees and you don't have to pay anything. I know that would be helpful for Senator Daughtry's business, because I think that is what she comes under. But if you have 16 or more, then you're required to pay. Those with under 14 employees may be very lucrative, and those with over 16 may be having a hard time. We just need to find a way through this where it answers the questions, keeps our businesses viable, because they're the ones who are going to be picking up a lot of this. And we don't think that we've had proper time to look at it. Now, one of the things about the process, and I mentioned this in one of the other bills had before us, is that the process sometimes reveals things that we need to look at of substance. And I think Mr. Austin touched on a few things of substance that we need to deal with. If we don't know what they are, we can't go ahead with unless we have a clear path to what the bill will really do. We did pass the bill without even knowing what the cost is, and I don't think that's good legislation, good way to do it. It's not any way that I would conduct my personal business or any business that I might have. So let's, as I said before, let's slow walk this. Let's get more people into the room for real discussions and find out what we can do.
Jim, thanks so much for your call. And Maddie, I'm going to try to move it along, and you can respond after that. An email from Nick reflects what Representative Bradstreet said. He asks, I have a question for the supporters of this legislation. I personally support paid family medical leave and want a program in Maine. I mean this respectfully, but why should large employers have to subsidize businesses like Senator Daughtry's who won't have to pay any taxes? That doesn't seem fair.
So I'm going to jump in first off and say that the small business exemption actually came from other states as one of the best practices to sort of help deal with the burden. And this is a conversation the commission had ad nauseum, is how do we fairly and equitably divide this? And I should also add for viewers, my life is not just a legislature. I run a small business in Brunswick, Maine. I run a brewery. And I think one of the things that's been interesting for us is, we've seen what it's like to be an employee-driven economy. And we know when we're trying to hire people that this is a benefit they're looking for that most small and medium businesses cannot afford to offer. And actually, by the time this program goes live, I will likely have a workforce far larger than what we have. So I will unfortunately be out of that portion as well.
Well, but let me ask you that. Would it be a disincentive for companies that are right up to the cap to say, should we or shouldn't we add this next person? And all of this is going to kick in if we do.
So that's one of the things we discuss, and it's one of the things we think about. And one of the models that we threw out was maybe it's every first 15 employees are free. One of the other things that we really want to look at is making sure that we have incentives. You could look at, tax credits. We also have amazing programs through the Department of Economic and Community Development that already work with employers. So maybe that's something that we increase, as well as other states have done small business grants to help with the offset. But one of the things that I came from an employer, because this has to be workable, and that we sort of took some heat from some proponents, is building in an undue hardship. So if the employer cannot handle the leave, as someone who's had to run home to open the bar before because everyone's out sick, I know what this is like, that if the employer cannot have that employee out, that employee does not get to keep their job. Additionally, one of the compromises after 3 years of conversations that we made is that job protected leave does not kick in until 120 days. Now, that doesn't mean the employee can't access the program they've been paying into, to, they'll be able to take their leave. They just might not have a job. And I think that really captures when we're living in a seasonal economy and with such a high amount of tourism, we needed to have something like that to work for employers.
All right. Well, we are talking about the proposed Family and Medical Leave Act before the legislature. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can find us on social media or on email. Ask your question by email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we are talking about proposed legislation to enact paid leave to Maine workers for certain medical and family issues. With me, Representative Dick Bradstreet, who represents Vassalboro and is the lead Republican on the legislature's Joint Committee on Labor and Housing, and Senator Matty Daughtry, who is a Democrat from Brunswick and is the lead sponsor of this legislation we have been discussing. If you're quick, you can join the conversation. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on social media, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. And before we move on, Senator Daughtry, I just wanted to ask you, we don't know yet. The governor has not made a commitment to this bill either way, has she?
No, she's been part of those conversations. And as we've made clear to everyone involved, for Representative Cloutier and I, that we wanted to listen to as many as possible. We got some feedback from her that we've incorporated, as well as what she brought before the committee during the public hearing. But she's part of the process, just like Representative Bradstreet and I.
All right. I'm going to Umberto, who's calling from Unum. Hi, Umberto. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. And thanks to Senator Daughtry for her many years of work on this, and to the representative for many great questions and interactions during the recent hearings and work sessions. Just wanted to comment from the private insurance industry perspective. I represent Unum, as I mentioned, and we're the largest disability insurer in the United States. And because of that, we obviously have a close connection to the paid medical leave portion of this paid family and medical leave program. And in other states that have stood this up, most namely Massachusetts and New York, among many others, Unum and other carriers in the industry have become strong partners. So if this is enacted in its form, we do see that the private option to be a viable one to create a second avenue that is private sector focused and competitive that gives Maine employers some flexibility. And, you know, we've been here to offer our expertise and experience from the start. And if enacted, we'll continue to do so.
All right. And I'll turn to you, Representative Bradstreet. We've just heard someone from one of the largest employers in the state say, sounds good to him.
Well, thank you. Yeah. You know, he would be getting money for administering this. So it would sound good to me if I were doing that. Now, getting that leads us to talk about should the state do this as part of its under the DOL, directly under the Department of Labor, or should they just be an oversight entity that oversees the private sector entity administering the program? The startup cost projected, I think we mentioned anywhere from $65 to $75 million, is substantial. I think a private sector entity could do that and institute this much lower rate than that, a much lower cost than that. And there will be close oversight. I assume that the Department of Labor will set up procedures where they do have close oversight over the program, because anything that we do, we want to make sure that it's adhered to strictly by both the employer and the employee. It's I would be in favor of it if I were going to make money off it too.
Matty Daughtry.
So I just want to be clear that we got a fiscal note, exactly what Representative Bradstreet was saying. If it wasn't housed in DOL, and we have a competitive RFP for the best fit. So it's looking more like $12 million in the first year and $13 million in the first second, which shows you, you know, if you look at the referendum, that's a cost to the state of $65 to $72 million versus, you know, the amendment that we're putting forward, which is a much more reasonable approach of $12 to $13 million.
Yeah, all right. That's just the startup cost too. We haven't really explored what it's going to cost through the years for all the employers and employees. And that's, I think, what Mr. Austin was referring to when he said $300 million a year.
Umberto, thanks. Thanks so much.
Which is a tax. It's a tax, a mandated tax.
Thanks for calling in. We're going to move to Steve, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, this is exactly what's wrong. The Democrats doing the heavy lifting, and then the Republicans, all they want to offer is, well, it ain't quite right. I don't think that sounds right. That don't look right. You have no receipts. You have no information. The Democrat go ahead and gives you back the information which you said is incorrect. So all it becomes is a football. And so tell me that the Republicans can get in the room with the Democrats on this and do what regular adults do, which are we'll reach a compromise. No, you're just dragging this out, slow walking this. This doesn't look right. That doesn't look right. You lost the election, Maine Republicans.
Steve, thank you. Representative Bradstreet, you clearly hear the frustration in Steve's voice.
Well, I hear the frustration. Yes, I understand that. We did lose the election, and that the consequences are here today. So I think Senator Daughtry said she wanted to answer that. I think she has a more nuanced approach towards that than what the caller did.
If I can jump in, I just want to speak up for the bipartisanship of the Maine legislature. It doesn't make headlines, but I've worked with Representative Bradstreet on some amazing compromises. And that's one of the things, you know, even if everyone might not be on board, even up until the committee vote, you know, I was running back and forth asking our colleagues, you know, Senator Pouliot and I were, you know, going head to head, arguing in a corner. You know, that's what makes a better bill. And that's why I'm so committed to a legislative solution, is that it's all of us on board. And I have to speak up for my Republican colleagues. We might not always agree, but we really do work together, even on the topics that we might be yelling at each other. At the end of the day, it's like a big legislative family, and that's what makes everything stronger.
Well, thank Steve, you for that. You know, we don't yell at each other. And something like this, this is major. It needs a lot of thought that goes into it. We should not be passing a law that where we, you know, we realize later that we should have thought of something but didn't. We need to give this full and deep consideration, and that's all we're asking. We're not trying to put it off. A bad law is worse than no law, and we don't want a bad law.
Steve, thanks for your call. And I want to note that we did receive a message from Governor Mills' office this morning. The governor appreciates the committee's work on the legislation, and she looks forward to reviewing the changes they have adopted. We'll go to Rebecca calling from Camden. Hi, Rebecca. Oh. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to share my story. I'm a stroke survivor, and my mom actually ended up retiring early to be my full-time caregiver, including learning how to give me IV medication through a BIC line, so I was able to be home. Fortunately, we were in a position where we were financially okay, but I cannot express how important it was physically and emotionally and mentally to have my mother be my caregiver. And this bill will help make sure that more people have access to that kind of situation here in Maine. And that is just essential for us to work toward. Thank you.
And Rebecca, thank you. We have several messages that are similar to Rebecca's, making the point that this is already happening. People are already stepping away from their jobs for whatever reason, whether to care for a loved one or because they've just had a child. Representative Bradstreet.
Yes, again, we understand the need for a lot of people for this, the ability to get away. We just have to make sure we do it right. And we think that incentivizing something like this is much better than mandating it. I don't know if even you've talked about what it might cost the municipalities and other political entities if this were to pass the way it is, because they would come under it as well as the state. Many of them might already have something that covers this already, but others might not. We're just, good legislation takes time. It takes cooperation. It takes compromise, and we need to work together to find something that'll work for everybody and yet still doesn't kill the goose that laid the golden egg, which is the people who are paying the bills. Now, ultimately, a lot of the employees and small employers. So I think we need to be aware of that. Employers or small business people, they're our neighbors, they're our friends, they're our families. They're fully aware of what's going on, and I don't know of any employer who hasn't tried to work with employees when they find themselves in this situation. It's to their benefit to do that. when I had a small business, it was more like a family than a business. We always took care of people and saw that they were taken care of. And I think we can find a way to do that that is more of a less of a sledgehammer approach, which I think a lot of this will it is. So that's my long and short of it.
Rebecca, thank you for your call. We are going to go now to Representative Kristen Cloutier, who is co-sponsor of the bill. Representative Cloutier, I know you've been listening to this conversation. What would you like to add?
Thanks, Jennifer, and thanks for having us. Yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, I just want to say that this is about Maine and that this proposal was created by Mainers, for Mainers, through 2 years of commission work. We've certainly done the slow walk and another year spent on a statewide tour collecting feedback from over 300 businesses, individuals, and various other stakeholders. You know, the proposal for the legislature represents months of compromise. We've improved the hardship exemption, as Senator Daughtry mentioned. We've revised benefit qualifications, the wage replacement. We've shortened the length of time that folks can be out on leave. So we've really tried to be, like, very responsive to the concerns that have been put forth by the business community. We've listened to their ideas, and we incorporated them into this bill. And, you know, I think that we need to do all that we can to attract workers to our state to fill the jobs that employers have available. And a program like this is how we actually support those businesses, by making Maine a place where people want to live, work, raise their families. And it's been, you know, shown in various studies that PFML actually boosts worker productivity, improves employee retention, and increases labor force participation. So again, I think that this is a plan and a proposal that is probably one of the most worked pieces of legislation that the State House may have ever seen. And I'm really proud of the proposal that Senator Daughtry and I have put together and have really, you know, again, tried to be responsive to the needs of both folks who would access this plan, but also the businesses who would help to support it.
Representative Cloutier, thanks so much for calling in. Kristen Cloutier is a co-sponsor of this bill. Representative Bradstreet, when do you hope to have something in place by that the full legislature will vote on and the governor will face?
Well, it's not in our, the ball's not in our court. It's in the majority's court. And I would like to comment, Representative Cloutier mentioned too, and I thank her for all the work that she did on it. However, you know, we have to deal with the bill as we see it now, even though it's been compromised. We think it's still an outlier and it's too expensive. When we looked at the choices that they had when they had their listening sessions, and they were doing that in order to find what the final bill would look like. And yet when it came out, they were always on the high side. They opted for the high side, the more expensive side, the more generous benefit side, which will make us an outlier. It will be more expensive, I think, than what we're anticipating. And if that's the case, it will be a detriment. Let's do it right. And I think that we need to, it needs more work. I think it needs a lot more work.
Maddie Daughtry, what do you think is a realistic timeline?
So we have 3 more weeks of session. So this is going to be something that's going to be moving forward. And I just want to be clear that this entire process, we sort of flipped the status quo. So the 2 pieces of legislation, look up the bill. It actually is that high part. We wanted that to be the commission work. And then we put out our amendment based on what we heard on these conversations. And the wage tier we're discussing actually is closer and lower than a lot of other states as well. But this is something with the referendum in the wings that we unfortunately will have to be acting on in the next 3 weeks. but yeah, no, it's something that's going to be coming for it soon. And even though, you know, we're working it through, we still have language review. So there's another chance for the committee, for all of us in labor and housing, to be able to look at it again, and for all of us to hear from anyone who's listening to hear about, you know, their experiences.
Of course, a vote has not happened, so you don't know if it will be a 2/3 vote. But if the governor were to veto this, then do you believe, Senator Daughtry, that it is likely that we would be facing a statewide referendum in 2024?
I mean, we've heard from the organizers, and I'm not necessarily a fan of things happening at referendum. I really think committee process and, you know, the buy-in from everyone is what we need. But they've made it quite clear that if we don't take action on this, that they will be putting the referendum in. And as both a legislator, a citizen, and especially as an employer, there are a lot of things in the referendum that I have some concerns about, and why I think, you know, the process of 3 years, a much more moderate cost, you know, finding that compromise that we've been doing is really what's key.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us for the hour. 3 weeks left. You all have a lot to do, and not just on this bill. So I appreciate you taking the time to be with us here today on Maine Calling. The voice you just heard, Senator Mattie Daughtry, a Democrat from Brunswick. The other voice you heard for the hour, Representative Dick Bradstreet, a Republican who represents Vassalboro. Sorry for the tongue twister there. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris, with help from Carly Peruccio. Maine Calling is produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith, with help from Slade Moore. Visit mainecalling.org to find past shows, to listen to this one again, and to subscribe to Maine Calling's weekly newsletter. Again, mainecalling.org. Tomorrow on the program, if you are a fan of crime writing, this is the show for you. We're going to hear from Maine crime writers on how they do what they do and get their ideas. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.